Cliff Ransom. Jeff, I have sort of a mantra on GE that says that the culture in this company is really quite highly developed in two areas. One is risk identification, and the second is risk mitigation. That's my line, so let me ask you two questions about it. One, do you think that is an accurate appraisal? And I know you'll disagree with me if you want to. But two, was that something, if it is true, is it something that you developed consciously, or did it bubble up?
You know, Cliff, again, my view is risk culture has always been part of the company. I think there is a certain aspect of being in old line industrial businesses that I think give you a thoughtful approach, particularly in areas like financial services. But there's no doubt that between 2007 and today, from an enterprise risk standpoint, this company's better in every way. I think in terms of scenario planning, in terms of stress testing, in terms of looking around corners and things like that, you know, Cliff, there's just no doubt that the company is significantly better today than it's ever been from a risk management standpoint.
I did that.
Look, I just think it's a learning culture. It's a learning company. You know, I just think there's never a time when you can ask enough questions as a leadership team. There's never a time that you can be discerning enough. And I just think the macro environment over the last period of time has been amazing. And I think the company's responded and gotten better, and we're all better for it. Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Steve Winoker. First question, just as I look at the 2012 outlooks, you're talking about 50 basis points of margin expansion and 5 to 10% organic growth leading to double-digit earnings growth. How should we think about it if, in fact, that growth does not materialize? Can you still – how much of that margin do you think you can get? And then how do you think about the risk to the 5 to 10%?
So, you know, what I would say, Steve, is that we've both hedged back on the revenue side, and we're going for more cost than 50 basis points. So the way I would describe it is there would be macroeconomic scenarios that are worse than our core plan that still end up with double-digit earnings growth industrially.
Okay, and then just as a
– So revenue hedge and cost hedge.
And then a little bit deeper question, just on the gas turbine front, a lot of the data that we look at for greater than 60 megawatt units for 2011 year-to-date seem to show, and it's preliminary, but seem to show Siemens taking share broadly in the order rates. What do you think about that? Is it and how do you feel positioned going forward in terms of arresting that, stopping it?
Look, what I would say, Steve, is that the orders get we book orders when we get cash. They book orders when they get orders. So we basically book orders at different times. If you look at the heavy-duty gas turbine market in a macro setting, we've got about 45% market share. They've got about 45% market share, and all the other guys have about 10. So we have a different cadence for when we book orders, and I think we feel good about our position right now, quality of products and where we are.
And just last question, what happens if the GE Capital dividend does not come? In other words, it keeps getting deferred out and the Fed basically...
So we've built cash buffers inside the operating plan, you know, and we just continue to run the company and run it well. And the industrial business has a very strong cash position. So I think that's, you know, that's how I would categorize that. But that, again, that's a scenario we think about. And again, I just think we will continue to generate upside in cash.
Still be able to grow the dividend in line with
that. That would be our expectation, Steve. Yeah, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Jeff. Two questions, Jeff. First on GE Capital, you kind of seem to, you know, make a point that it could be smaller, and perhaps that's music to some people's ears. But I'm wondering if there's something you see in the remix potential that makes you think that's a likely outcome. So you do have that band of capital to potentially redeploy. Are you foreseeing something that changes that makes you not want to do that? Or
no, Jeff, I think what you should count on is us remixing within the $440 billion to get higher returns, and then just continue to look over time to see, you know, how are we positioned versus the banks as we come through it? Where are the regulators positioned over time, and how do all the rules within Dodd-Frank and other regulation get positioned? But I look at just the core plan of remixing the 440. That ought to get you up to $9 or $10 billion of earnings in GE Capital. I think that's the best way to plan the next couple of years. But I think from a capital allocation and strategic standpoint, at the end of the day, we're only going to be in the businesses in GE Capital where we have clear competitive advantage.
And then just a further follow-up on the margins, and perhaps the answer is embedded in your notion of a cushion, but you do have R&D coming down. You don't have deal integration costs. It doesn't sound like the service OE mix is adverse. Is there something in particular that's holding the margins back relative to what could be?
Well, Jeff, like I said, I think we've got a funnel of more than 200 basis points of margin improvement. I'd like it to be better, you know, than 50. But I think 50 is a – what I would say is 50 is a commitment case and could mitigate any mix variations of a much stronger OE versus service mix or things like that. So what we've tried to do is create a little bit of buffer that could withstand any mix changes as you went through it.
And I was also just wondering, finally, the 3 to 4 cents of restructuring you're talking about in the fourth quarter, is that, you know, quote unquote paid for by something, or should we think about numbers coming down 3 or 4 cents? Or
I don't think you need to think about numbers coming down. You know, I think it's a largely going to be in the run rate, you know, of how, or it's an elevated run rate, but you know, I still think we're going to have a good fourth quarter, you know, and again, we're kind of out of the guidance business, but I think, you know, I just think we're going to do more restructuring in the quarter. Shannon.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Shannon O'Callaghan. So in wind, you know, you've got this technological advantage you're talking about. You know, record-like volumes, 50% market share, but, you know, pricing's still pretty lousy. So is there just going to continually be too much excess capacity, or do you actually see a way out?
Well, look, I think I'd say what's happening in the U.S. is kind of artificial, right, Shannon? So you've got a one-year kind of pull forward. The 1.6 megawatt wind turbine will go from making a few to making a lot in just 24 months. So we're going to come down the learning curve and all that stuff on wind turbines. We see the market stabilizing outside the United States, you know, in terms of pricing. And then I just say the way to think about the business is with, 10% DM rates in the wind business, it's a 50 to 100% return on total capital. So it's just a differently structured industry than the heavy-duty gas turbine market is structured. And I think investors have felt most of the pain this year in terms of margin reduction, and I think that's really largely built into the run rate as we look forward into the future.
And then, you know, on the funnel of over 200 bips, I mean, when you think about that by the businesses, how would you break it down?
By the various businesses, you know, I'd say that aviation has got a very solid business plan around it. Really, all the businesses have a decent profile as it comes to margins. Energy may be up a couple basis points. Transportation up probably the most. But everyone kind of seeing positive margin enhancement next year.
So energy is the least of the bunch?
Like I said, energy will see, you know, strong revenue growth, some margin enhancement, and double-digit earnings growth. And then you'll see more in energy going into 2013 in terms of margin enhancement. But energy will be positive margins in 12. Positive margin growth in 12. Scott.
Thanks. Jeff, you mentioned the potential gas turbine market picking up. I mean, what's your personal view on the odds of the EPA goes through with the plans to shut down these plants, the old coal plants?
You know, Scott, I really I think it's better than 50-50, but I don't know. You know, in other words, it could not happen. I think it's still better than 50-50, but it is hard to predict when you look at it, given all of the puts and takes around the EPA and things like that. But I'd say it's still better than 50-50. But I've always considered that to be above and beyond how we feel about the company. You know, in other words, if you got this incredible gas turbine wave, it'd be even better. But if you look at our heavy-duty gas turbine business today, our oil and gas business, renewables, stuff like that, we've got a lot of good growth still built in.
All right, Martin. maybe we can switch gears a little bit and talk about R&D. I mean, when you came on board, I think GE was probably a little product light. And, you know, you've put a fairly large investment in over the last 10 years. I mean, are you where you need to be?
I think so.
So you can drive the kind of organic growth rates?
I really do, Scott. I mean, I think what you want to have is good products, because products give you the optionality around margins and share. When you don't have good products, you don't have the options around margin and share. I think if you look across our product portfolio today, we have the right optionality around, you know, what we want to do in aviation, what we want to do in energy, what we want to do in healthcare. And I don't see it growing as a percentage of revenue. I see it probably shrinking over time.
Okay. And last question. I mean, you know, there were a number of oil and gas acquisitions you made in the last 2 years, and there was some criticism out there on valuation. But, you know, now you've had a chance to integrate these transactions, take a look at them, and see whether it's matching up with the deal model. I mean, give us a sense of whether you feel like these were smart moves and maybe how you score the success.
Scott, if you just look at the year one deal models, we're ahead of pro forma on the deals we've done, but it is still early. I mean, I think it's still, if I just go down the list, you know, both Wellstream has given us a great footprint in Brazil. That's what we thought. It's given us a good flanker product as it pertains to our subsea business. Wood Group has really built submersible pumps, has helped both in terms of well extraction and also shale gas, good there. Convertim, a great application engineering footprint. Lineage has opened up data centers to us. Dresser has given us multiple niches. The way I think about it, you know, it's all in the context of a good high-return industrial portfolio. And the thing about oil and gas, when you do an oil and gas deal, you can walk into Exxon or Chevron or any big customer, and you can pick up a piece of business that day, the day you conclude the deal. You can pick it up that day. If you compare it to an aviation acquisition, I love the aviation space. But if you're not on the airframe, you ain't getting on. If you're not on the 737 MAX today, it's not like you're going to buy a company that's not on and get on. So you just, in energy, I think, have a lot of optionality as it pertains to both cost and revenue synergies. And that's why I think we feel good about where we are there. Yeah. Yeah, Dean.
Great, thank you. Jeff, just a clarification first on the restructuring. I know we've come back to this. 3 to 4 cents, it would be atypical for GE to do naked restructuring. Just to clarify, is there an offset to that charge?
Yeah, I don't. It's not going to be naked restructuring. We're still going to have a positive. It's just a higher run rate. And I would say that the way we'll finish corporate is slightly higher, a slightly higher expense than when I look at the variety of models. And I think the way to think about it is we're doing better other places. Okay, so that's the best I'm going to do in a non-guidance. Is that clear to everybody? I just want to make sure there's no, you know. So I just think the geography, as I look at it, is a little bit off. And we want to do restructuring this year to be even better prepared for next year.
Okay, and then the second question on capital allocation. This was a little bit of an atypical year on the M&A side because you basically swapped out.
Just going back to the last point, is everybody clear on that? I just want to make sure there's no, you know, no.
I'm seeing most of
you nodding heads. Okay? No, I think business doing well, corporate, some restructuring, the totality is still really good. Good, okay. Trevor, you okay with that? Okay.
All right, on capital allocation for M&A, this was an atypical year in terms of just swapping out of media into oil and gas.
Right.
You kept within the $1 to $3 billion in what basically fits the bolt-on. Is looking forward, are you going to stay in this bolt-on $1 to $3 billion? You hinted you can go bigger, but how do you size the bets appropriately
markets? I think, Dean, if you look at John Kroenicke, that team has a lot on their plate to execute on this year. You know, the thought of doing an energy acquisition, it's just not going to happen, you know, of any size in 12. Just not going to, right? Look, healthcare, you know, we'll do small stuff, but we have good market shares in most of the healthcare, and we're not going to do a big, expensive healthcare deal in 2012. Just not gonna. Okay, so that's aviation. I like our space. We got a lot on our plate in aviation, you know, next year. When I think about execution wise, but Dean, I just think we're going to stay in the $1 to $3 billion niche. And look, guys, I'm a 30-year GE man. You know, the vast majority of my early career doing $3 billion of acquisitions in a year was unthinkable. You know, we never did. It's just we just over the last decade, we had to fix this baby up a little bit. You know, we had to contemporize it, make it stronger, get faster growth. That's what we've done. I feel like that's where we sit today, Dean. And so we just don't need a lot when I look out over the next few years. We got a great energy business. We've got a great aviation business. We've got a great transportation business. We've got the chance to do adjacencies. We built adjacencies from $4 billion to $40 billion in the last decade. You know, sometimes our guys would like to do more, but I just think we got a lot on our plate right now to execute, and that's what I want to do. That's, yeah.
I want to look at GE Capital and kind of my question is sort of two parts, going back, looking back with some learning in terms of the culture of learning and then looking forward. What competitive advantage did you get? Well, let me frame it this way. You got out of mortgages, you got out of insurance. Looking back, would you have, you know, liked to have scaled that back more? And specifically in real estate, you know, what was your competitive advantage in real estate? Again, looking back, and then I want to look forward.
Well, look, I mean, I think they're all different. You know, I would say in insurance, competitive advantage, none. In a lot of consumer spaces, mortgages, not much. In real estate, not to be argumentative, quite a bit. You know, I'd say point to point, you know, really, we let commercial real estate get too big, my bad. But on a smaller scale, we made a boatload of money. We're well positioned. We've got a good team. It should be smaller. It will be smaller. But in commercial real estate debt, we're quite good. We're quite good. So I just think it's, you know, to me, it's just about, again, it's about returns. It's about how we're positioned versus banks. It's about where ultimately, you know, we still don't know where the regulatory and market focus is going to be. We need to play that out. And it's about having control. You know, basically, 3 years ago, we said we're going to get to $440 billion in ending net investment. We got there. We didn't have to count on doing big, stupid spin-outs and stuff like that. We basically got there on our own. And that's how I think about it going forward.
Related on going forward, the competitive advantage in middle market lending versus banks. Can you give us some more color on that?
Huge origination, great flexibility, better domain, knowledge of the assets, a better linkage for what the customers want versus what banks have. A lot of small industrial companies that can link up to GE very easily, better margins.
And last unrelated question, in China particularly, how do you protect your technology? I know this is a complicated issue, but...
Look, I think it's always complicated. I think the way we do it is we control what goes there. We always do joint ventures, so we have control built into the joint ventures. And we keep investing in businesses where we're better, you know? I mean, when you think about jet engines or really any of our products, we are significantly better than anybody that we would interface with in China and are spending more money. So that edge is going to be long-lived is the way I would look at it. So we can do it at our choice. There's not one thing we do in China that I don't personally approve. So, you know, we kind of have a pretty good strategic perspective on China. It doesn't mean that we've done everything perfectly. But we've done a lot well. Yeah, John.
So just so I'm clear, is there a big tax gain coming to pay for this restructuring in the fourth quarter? That was a joke. Okay. Talk about mining, Jeff. You highlighted it. Just what's your vision for this vertical, especially in the context of very large global players, say trucks, where you see your competitive advantage, and then sticking to a bolt-on strategy of $1 to $3 billion. How do you see mining progressing for GE?
You know, what I would say is, we already have a $3 billion presence. We do a lot through an OEM platform. So we do a lot with Komatsu. We do a lot with companies like Joy. We do a lot in the components around the mine itself. You know, John, in terms of when we acquired Convertim, we acquired a big mining footprint. We'd like to grow it over time. Like I said, no big deals, small bolt-on acquisitions. And this is one I would compare to distributed energy, where, you know, you kind of start one day at a certain size and you keep making it bigger over time organically and inorganically. But there's not going to be any lightning bolt in that space because I don't think we need to. We've got a great relationship with Komatsu. I mean, you know, we are the guts kind of inside Komatsu. That's a pretty capital-efficient way to play mining, and that's, you know, that's where we like the space.
Same comment around process. You've got some very large established players at Emerson, Yokogawa, some others, but you have now kind of carved the space out a little bit more with a circle around it. What are your thoughts toward building that space out? Because it clearly fits...
John, I think if you look inside, it's now a part of Dan Heintzman's business. We've got a $3 or $4 or $5 billion set of businesses that we did some small acquisitions. Bentley Nevada, big part of Dresser went in there, and again, that's been primarily an organic grow with smaller bolt-on acquisitions. So I don't see big deals in either place. But we like them because they're places where you can make a lot of money on small deals. That's why we like it.
And then, Jeff, if you look back over the past 10 years, I mean, some people might characterize GE's M&A activity as pretty massive. I mean, there was you guys have not been shrinking violets when it's come to sort of buying and selling companies. Would you characterize the next 10 years of your tenure as more of a harvest mode, if you will? So in effect, you've kind of already articulated the 1 to 3, the product portfolio that you talked about. And if so, would it make sense, maybe not today or next year, but for you at some point to begin to much more aggressively repurchase your shares, given what appears to be a pretty robust trajectory for cash flow?
First of all, I don't think about 10 years, I'd have to say. I think about, you know, like a year at a time, so or maybe a quarter at a time. But, John, when I look back, we just didn't have the goods. Industrially, right? We rode the power bubble up. We weren't investing as much as we needed to in R&D. We hadn't replenished the hopper, if you will. I felt like we needed to make our businesses, and that shows up in, you know, look, we have done a great job in our energy business. I think John Kronicki has done a fantastic job, and we'll make the same amount this year that we made in 2002, fundamentally, right? So that just shows you kind of the hill that you have to climb sometimes. And so we've done that by repositioning the portfolio. We've made, I think, good investments in platforms that can grow over time.
And I like the way the industrial company looks today. I like what we have exposure to in terms of oil and gas and shale gas and big aviation footprint and stuff like that. And I think, you know, so I think it does give us a lot more cash optionality when you think about the future. Now, look, we've got to go through the process with the Fed. We're going to do it in a constructive way. That's going to give us a sense for, you know, where GE Capital and how that is. But I think the good news is we've got a lot of cash. And we've got inherently a very strong industrial business, as strong as we've ever had. Now, you know, GE Capital, look, we're committed to GE Capital. The team's done a great job. But, you know, we want to be in businesses that we have clear advantage in. Other questions? Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. I wonder if we go a little deeper into China, a couple of respects. First, you know, in your slide where you're showing the Asia high-growth markets decelerating to 15, presumably China is decelerating as well. And I'm wondering if you could might break that down. Where do you see that decel from a segment perspective? And how do you think about GE versus the market, which then feeds back into your earlier point? We've done well in China, maybe have done as well as we would have liked. And how do you see either the landscape or what GE specifically is doing changing over the next?
You know, Terry, what I would say is Asia actually is a slower India and ASEAN, and China is actually going to be faster growth in 12 versus 11. So, you know, like any of these countries, there's never like one macro answer. I'd say in aviation and in healthcare, we've kind of run the table in China. You know, we've got extremely high market share, a great competitive position. We're better than our competitors. We are the big, you know, in healthcare, we are the big dog. We are bigger than Siemens and Philips. In aviation, in the last year, we've won like 70% of the campaigns in aviation over the last year. The ultimate size of, I think, where GE is in healthcare has a lot to do with energy. And fundamentally, you know, we did a big bumbled buy in the early part of the decade, like I'd say 2003, 2004. Then the country went back primarily to coal. You know, between like 2005 and 2010, most of the new power generating capacity was in coal. And now, Terry, gas is getting a ton of play, a ton of play. And some of that is shale gas. Some of that is just having the east-west gas pipeline done, stuff like that. So if gas goes from 5 to 10%, energy is going to grow immensely. If gas goes from 10 to 20%, energy is going to grow like a bunch more. And so I think China could be a big upside for us, but a lot of it has to do with how fast the gas turbine industry really grows. So I think if you think about heavy-duty gas turbines in balance, you know, my hunch is that the output grows next year, you know, versus the number of units we sold this year. Heavy-duty gas turbines will grow again next year, you know, in terms of units above. And then you've got Russia, U.S., China as being, if any one of those markets really broke, you'd have a big upside in the heavy-duty gas turbine business. And you know, it's Scott's question on does the coal get replaced. It's your question on how big will the gas turbine market be. In Russia, it's, you know, do they want to use gas for their own power-generating consumption versus today they use mainly coal? You know, those are the big macro questions that you can ask.
And I wonder if you could follow up with a comment on profitability in China. Are you still in, you know, heavy investment mode there? You know, obviously, you don't have as big a services mix there, so the overall margins presumably are lower. But comment there?
You know, China, again, Terry, its service business is growing rapidly. Our aviation campaigns are no worse there than any place else in the world. Healthcare margins, it's the highest margin healthcare country in the world. So tremendous healthcare. And then power gen kind of in the mix.
Okay. And then just lastly, if we assume the JEX dividend is approved and goes through, is there any sense that you would have restriction with regards to how you wanted to utilize that cash at the corporate level between dividend and buyback per some of the Fed's recent comments?
You know, I think it's different because it's a dividend to the GE parent, really. And so I would find that to be very unlikely. You know, and again, just, you know, think about it, guys, in terms of context, right? We've got cash at the parent, you know, $8 to $10 billion of cash at the parent. We've got, you know, 11 or 12% tier one capital inside GE Capital, and then we have a lot of liquidity, right? We've got $80 billion plus or minus, and you know, so we've got like a couple layers of protection now, you know, that, in terms of the business being safer than it's ever been. So
maybe one or two more.
Great, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I just had a question on 2012 and the equipment margin specifically, because I guess if I look at, you know, the numbers that you gave, you know, industrial sales all in this year about $100 billion, you know, you gave the service proportion of that. If we assume the service margins grow 200 points next year and the overall industrial margins up 50, I mean, your guidance seems to imply equipment margins are down next year. Is that correct? Because obviously, you know, R&D is coming off. The value gap's getting better. So is it
again, you've got a full year of GNX shipments. You've got more wind, less gas. So you've got some big mix items that are kind of flowing through the energy and aviation space. So even though each one of those gets better from a profitability standpoint, you've got more GNXs, you've got more wind versus gas, and that's really how it flows through.
Okay, but the equipment margin will be down next year because of the mix.
Yeah, flat to down. But, you know, again, we've got a bigger funnel than 50 basis points in terms of how we look at it, but again, I think the mix inside equipment is going to have products that have lower margins as you go through it.
And then just you know, you've mentioned Chinese gas a couple of times. You know, I think if you look at the market, maybe in 3 or 4 years, it could be 10 gigawatts, let's say, of annual gas additions just in China. You know, the suppliers being lined up from Turkmenistan, the domestic reserves are being exploited. So when you think about GE's positioning there, you have about $2 billion in energy sales, I think, in China. You know, how would you imagine the phasing of the revenues you get from the gas opportunity would work? I mean, I guess, you know, you'd have obviously pipeline compression business, you'd have some extraction business, and then that would be gas.
We should have a third of the business there. You know, it's our partners, Harbin, Siemens is there, MHI is there. I think if the industry grows, that's not a bad estimate for what we should target.
And then lastly, I guess, on the adjacencies, I mean, you've put them into three groups. You know, one is under the sort of heading, I guess, strengthening, which presumably means that's the area where your M&A is going to be focused in of those three groups. You have about $11 billion of sales there. Do you have any sort of medium-term target of the you'd be willing
really.
To share?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that's where the M&A is going to be targeted. I think if you look at the aviation systems business, we're doing a joint venture in China that's going to help us grow that business. We continue to see good expansion opportunities around the edges in mining, you know. But I think acquisitions could take place in any one of those three places. But, I think to a certain extent, what we did in solar is a pretty good indication of, you know, there's a lot of carnage in the solar industry right now. I think our preference is to build organically and do it over time and stay profitable and see where it goes. Yeah.
Great. Last one.
Thanks. Your enthusiasm on gas turbines, just one more question there. Is that entirely because GE's market share is so much more dominant in gas than in other power generation technologies, or is it just any kind of, you know, increase in building and power plants is going to benefit GE no matter what the technology?
Look, we've got a diversified portfolio, right? So we've got wind and nuclear and solar and coal and gas, and so we can basically sell anything a customer wants. But, you know, $4 gas, and when it's plentiful, that kind of answers the question. So at $4 gas, your new units are cheaper than coal. They're cheaper than anything. And so in the end, the market always works. And we just are lucky that we've got 45% market share in gas. But if gas were, you know, 15 bucks, I'd say the answer would be something else. You know, but every day you get more gas being found. Argentina, India, China, Poland, U.S., Rex Tillerson declares that gas is the new coal. I say, you know, right on, Rex, let's go. I'm right behind you, you know. So I think it's all about, in the end, it's all about cost of electricity. And, you know, the good news is that wind is down the learning curve now. You know, we've gotten big orders in Canada and Brazil, other places in wind. So the business outside the United States is very strong in wind right now. So I think that's got potential to be, you know, equally good over time.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you to our audience today. Just a reminder, our next earnings we'll talk to you on is on January 20th. Please join us for the reception here, but this concludes our webcast. Thank you, everyone.